The island ego joined this continent. This was the note on which we concluded our meeting last time. It is a famous line from Sri Aurobindo's Savitri describing the dissolution of the ego personality of Ashwapati, but not the annihilation of his personality. He says he joined its continent. His consciousness joins, not merges, but joins the larger consciousness of which it is really a part. And that is the subject for our talk this evening. In what way one proceeds after certain radical steps have been taken for the dissolution of the ego? When one withdraws from the external life of the body, life and the mind, and turns one's preoccupation inward in search, in quest of the self, gradually a certain detachment is affected from the external life activity, and with appropriate discipline and sustained effort, one arrives ultimately at the realization, at the identity with one's true self. That is the end in many of the lines of spiritual tradition. Of course, for us, it is a step, and a capital step, leading to other further steps. One arrives at identity with the self, realizes that what one thought to be one's real life, the external life, is not the true life, but one's true life begins with the attainment of identity with the self. But a second question arises: what shall be the relation between the self now realized and the life of the mind, the life force and the body that one has left behind? There is always the tendency to regard this life that one has left behind as something inferior, as transitory, as what is called a passing show on the bosom of the silent, immutable self. Even as one does the mistake while engrossed in the worldly life of considering the concept of the self, the concept of the soul, as something fanciful, something superstitious, something religious, that means irrational. Similarly, when one arrives in the domain of the self proper, there is this tendency to regard, to pay back the compliment, to regard the usual life, the mundane life as it is called, as fanciful, false, dispensable. But For the seeker at the integral path, that option is not open simply because it is baseless. The position we start with is that the spirit, the self, and the material world, life in the material world, are two rungs of one gradation. The spirit in its status at the top, the evolving life at the bottom on earth, but there is a constant relation. One has to find this relation in the self. The relation between the transcendent self, the self that is beyond the world and the world, is to be found in the depths of the self, where all converge. If it is true, if it is open to experience and realization, that the Divine Self can be realized in oneself, can be perceived and experienced around oneself, and contacted beyond this world, beyond both the universe and the individual, man, being capable of identification in his essence with the Divine, should also be able to reproduce this relation, to share in the same experience. And one of the oldest of the Indian Upanishads affirms that not only it can be so, but it has to be so. The perspective that this tradition and ancient thought gives is to regard all things, all forms, all beings in the self. Not only that, the self itself in the forms, and the self as the forms. An equally old Upanishad puts it graphically. Says he desired, when he was alone, he desired to be many. To manifest, in our terminology, to manifest. And out of his own being, he projected this creation of forms and movements. He was not satisfied with creating and releasing a world. Creating, he entered into it. He entered not merely in a general way in the creation, but individually in each form he enters. He is the indweller in each one. He creates, he enters, and he dwells. All the three capital steps have been described graphically in the Upanishad. Says, the spirit desired of old, I would be manifold for the birth of the peoples. Therefore, he concentrated all himself in thought, and by the force of his brooding, he created all this universe, all whatsoever exists. Now, when he had brought it forth, he entered into that he had created. Entering, he became the is here and the may be there. He became that which is defined and that which has no feature. He became this housed thing and that houseless. He became knowledge and he became ignorance. He became truth. He became falsehood. He became all truth, even whatsoever here exists. Therefore, they say of him that he is truth. This is the broad perspective that the seeker of the way of knowledge must always have. First, he envisages this universe not as a creation of a power of illusion, of a power of falsehood, of an inferior demiurge, but as a deliberate creation, a self-projection of the eternal. The infinite projects the finite out of its bosom. The finite is as much real as the infinite from which it emerges. Essentially, the degree of reality is the same. But in manifesting, in creating, in projecting out of itself, the infinite, the eternal, does not become subject to what it creates. It is not subject to time and space, which are but circumstances contained in its projection. All movements, all circumstances and conditions are subsequent to the act of creation. Having created, the eternal continues to be what it is. It is free. When the ancient seers say it is not this, it is not that, it does not mean that the eternal, that this is different from the eternal, that is not the eternal. It simply means that the eternal, that the infinite is not exhausted by it. The eternal is not completely held or contained in one of its creatures. But on that account, the fact that each form, each creature derives directly from the reality cannot be denied. So this is the first realization to regard. First, to believe mentally. Second, to feel in the heart. To realize in day-to-day life that this spectacular world, creation, the universe, is a projection, a purposive creation of the Lord. He it is who has become the many. If one stays in that realization alone, one feels the whole movement of the world, creatures, men, all living beings, passing like so many figures, images, shadows, and in its haste to come to a conclusion, the human mind decides that the world consists of images and figures, figments of some colossal imagination passing on the surface of the ineffable, white, pure self. That is an exaggeration. If we persist in our quest for the truth, we see, we become aware that the divine reality is not only in ourselves. The distinct self that we have realized is not only in the depths or on the heights of our own being, but it is also to be found in the depths and on the heights of other beings. He who dwells in me dwells equally in my neighbor, in another, not only in human forms, but in all forms. This truth is at the basis of the unity of creation. No doubt we are separated by fragmentation in form, by division in consciousness consequent on the birth of egoism. But at a certain level, which you and I can easily verify, there is the oneness. And that oneness is of this divine self, which is equally spread out. And if I want to realize my unity with others, with the rest of the world, that true unity can be realized only on that basis where myself and yourself meet. There is no doubt one self, but it has posited itself at so many centers. It is at the level of the self that one breathes a natural oneness. Till then, till the spiritual realization of the self in all, the common self between me and you is realized, all else is talk, maybe preparatory talk, to prepare the climate, to build up the climate, to accustom the mind, so that the whole being is readied to receive the truth when it dawns. Unless this realization and attainment are true on our soul level, they remain acquirements of mental knowledge. Well, the second truth leads to the third. It is not enough to have a relation with other forms, with other creatures, with the world at large, if only the divine is there as an indweller in each form. What about the form itself? What about the structure? True spiritual knowledge says that even the form, everything is the divine self. All in the self, the self in the all as the self. The two are earlier truths are incomplete without this culminating truth, of the self as the all. This is the general truth. But how does one realize it oneself? It is by identifying oneself in the soul with the manifesting divine, the divine in its aspect of manifesting, the soul being throwing out itself into a becoming. In that aspect, by identifying myself, my soul, I can also experience this movement of my being flowing into so many becomings. There are number of disciplines that are used to train the mind to participate in this spiritual attainment. The Upanishad speaks of concentration and meditation with the image of the ether, not this gross ether, but the supreme, the highest ether from which all creation emerges. Of course, the physical sky, the physical ether, being part of the supreme ether, can be taken as a helpful imagery. Just as ether envelops all, yet constitutes all and contains all, the spirit too envelops all, enters all and holds all in itself. This constant image, the spirit like the ether is everywhere, promotes a certain freedom for the mind from its petty involvements in local movements. The mind gets disinvolved, gets purified with this constant affirmation of the freedom of the spirit, of the freedom of which I am capable by growing in the spirit, and yet retaining my relation, the true relation that is possible with the universe. The first step indeed is to suppress, gradually acquire control and eliminate the ego. Second, the mental horizon must be slowly expanded. One starts with an intellectual belief, no doubt, but one translates it to the extent that is possible in day-to-day life, into practice. Similarly, the life emotions, sympathies, understandings, love, compassion, all these, instead of being confined in our own interest, in the interest of those with whom I am closely identified by whatever ties, but they are allowed a free scope, and the body itself is taught not to regard itself as a separate entity, but as a part dependent upon the universal matter, drawing sustenance from the universe. The life force is It is impressed upon the life force that it is but one wave of the ocean of life around, and the mind understands that it is one chamber, one fragment of the universal mind, and all its thoughts are some race that go out and emerge and immerge in the universal light around, these are certain lines of proceeding towards the exceeding of the personal, limited, individual consciousness and expanding, enlarging, breaking out into the larger consciousness, which is variously called the universal consciousness, the cosmic consciousness. Many have had this perception that once man exceeds his present mental limited ego-based consciousness and enters into the realm of the universal consciousness, things undergo a radical change. It's a famous Canadian doctor who, I won't say he had a realization, but he had a strong experience of this cosmic consciousness all of a sudden. And what he writes, after affirming that experience in himself, after undergoing the changes that are inevitable after having the true experience, what he writes will be interesting. He says, in contact with the flux of cosmic consciousness, all religions known and named today will be melted down. The human soul will be revolutionized. Religion will absolutely dominate the race. He means by religion, spirituality. It will not be in sacred books nor in the mouths of priests. It will not teach a future immortality nor future glories, for immortality and all glory exist in the here and now. The evidence of immortality will live in every heart, as sight in every eye. Doubt of God and of eternal life will be impossible, as is now doubt of existence. Churches, priests, forms, creeds, prayers, all agents, all intermediaries between the individual men and God will be permanently replaced by direct, unmistakable intercourse. Each soul will feel and know itself to be immortal, will feel and know that the entire universe, with all its good and with all its beauty, is for it and belongs to it forever. The world peopled by men possessing cosmic consciousness will be as far removed from the world of today as this from the world as it was before the advent of self-consciousness. This new race is in the act of being born from us, and in the near future will occupy and possess the earth. A most prophetic announcement made at least 4 decades ago. This stage of realizing the cosmic consciousness, or at any rate, of experiencing oneness with all, having a flow of love for all, which is one of the results of opening to the cosmic consciousness, is an indispensable step for what the mother calls transformation. It is a must for everyone who hopes to belong to the new age, particularly to those who are working and striving for the new consciousness in Auroville. This experience, this realization, or at least an opening to the working of the universal or cosmic consciousness, is the first important step to be worked out. I was speaking to someone regarding what exactly is implied when a person is admitted either in the ashram or in Auroville. There is a facile tendency to feel that once one is admitted or made a member of either Auroville or the ashram, one has qualified, one has got the requirements to be a member of the new race, but it is not so. Both Sri Aurobindo and the mother have repeatedly said that all that it means is that a possibility is seen in the individual concerned. His evolution has arrived at a stage when the possibility of transcending the old and emerging into the new, that appears in the soul. Once the possibility is seen, the mother gives a chance to the person to build upon it, to actualize that possibility. The opportunity is given, the field is opened, the grace is sanctioned. The rest is left to the individual to put in his personal effort, to take advantage of the opportunities given to him, and to develop himself in the mold of the ideal placed before him. This is one point I had to make clear, because I have been repeatedly asked why I am asked to go away. If mother did not consider me fit, why did she allow me? This is the answer. She sees a possibility. You have walked back upon it. That is the answer. Cyril, you said some questions were there. About mind or something?
Yes, the four minds was asked.
There are not really four minds, but many more.
Infinite.
Not that way. Broadly speaking, the mind is that part of our nature which thinks, which cognizes, which deals in ideas. But this mind has so many layers. That mind which is always concerned with physical things, attending to physical comforts, dealing in physical movements has its whole attention riveted on physical creature comforts, depends only upon physical data to think, to formulate, that is called the physical mind. That part of the mind which is involved in the movements of emotions, desires, ambitions, justifying them, giving them reasons, giving them a color of rational movements, expressing them in terms of thought, that is called the vital mind. The mind which deals on the data of the senses, each time there is an object, the senses rush, make an impact, bring the report, and the mind collects all these reports, mostly, as mother says, false reports, and coordinates them and builds up its own insecure, unsound knowledge. That is called the sense mind. Above the sense mind, there is the reasoning mind. The mind that reasons, this is so, that is so, whether the reason is correct or not is a different matter. But it reasons in vacuum. Above the reasoning mind is the pure thought mind, the ideative mind, the pure thought mind, where the mind moves in the dimensions of thinking. It's not so much concerned over practical matters. And above the thought mind are pure ideas, ideative mind, where ideas have not yet taken the form of thoughts. Broad principles, broad ideative movements, they are the ideative mind. Above this intellectual mind, above this mind, are the ranges of spiritual mind, of which what Sri Aurobindo calls the higher mind is the lowest rung. Above the higher mind is the illumined mind. Above the illumined mind is the intuitive mind. Above the intuitive is the over mind, and above the over mind is the super mind. That is a part. The body itself has a small mind. That is, the projection of the physical part in the mental layers, that is called the physical mind. Even when our mind is otherwise occupied, the hand thinks, the leg automatically withdraws if there is a danger. So there is a sort of a mechanical mind. You may call it the summit of the physical into the region of the mind. There is the body mind. Similarly, if there is a part of the mind involved in the vital, there is a part of the vital which projects into the mental. That is called the mental vital. The vital being, the vital part with the mental coloring, that is called the mental vital. Now, to distinguish the vital mind and the mental vital, you kindly note that the word that ends the phrase, that gives the clue. Vital mind, that means the vital part of the mind. The mind is the main thing. So mental vital, vital is the main thing. The mental is that part of the vital which has a mental nature, which has its own way of thinking, of planning. That is called the mental vital. Naturally, these divisions in Sri Aurobindo's philosophy don't exactly tally with those made by philosophers and thinkers in Europe. What they call the unconscious, the subconscious, is quite different. What we call the unconscious, what they call the unconscious, is what we call the subliminal. That part which is behind the external awaking intelligence, of which we are normally not cognizant, the subliminal, the larger mind, the larger vital, the larger physical, touching the universal mind, the universal life, and the universal matter, that is the subliminal. The subliminal ranges from top to toe. Now the whole is simply called the unconscious by certain philosophers in Europe, now in fashion. Simply because we are not conscious of it. It is conscious in its own way, perhaps in a more intensified way, with a larger range, the subliminal. I do not know what the subliminal means to the Western philosophers in Europe, like Freud, but to us, what the subliminal means is this. It is not unconscious. For us, the conscious level, then follows the subconscious. Subconscious means we are half conscious then. Below the subconscious is the unconscious. We are not at all conscious. But even in that domain of unconsciousness, there is a ray of consciousness of which is not active on the surface. When even that unconsciousness is congealed, becomes a block, that is inconscient. If you delve deep into the inconscient, you will find some throb of what develops ultimately into consciousness. The last stages of the inconscience, the nadir of inconscience, is nescience, where for all practical purposes there is no consciousness. It is a complete blank. It is to revivify this state of nescience that the mother says that the grace descended in the form of a ray of consciousness and light, and started the return journey of the soul. Any questions?
The meaning before the last one, you were discussing the states of sleep and dream, and that they are always present, whether we're lying in the bed or walking around. If one is trying to be conscious of this, and one is conscious of when one is dreaming, if one is lying down, or just walking around, is there something one can further do? Because it seems as though those things have a tremendous effect on the whole system, the whole nervous system, these dreams, these states that the mind gets into and that one can be aware of. Is there a further movement that one can take with them?
When you go further than being just conscious of being in a dream, the dream stops. The dream consciousness, it's converted into the waking consciousness.
What if one has been changing one's dream?
That is, you assert your will and change the happenings in the dream. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
It is an interesting exercise It means some things are going on and you are consciously participating in events on the subtler plane. They can have an indicatory value, a significance, which can translate itself in day-to-day life. But to dwell too much on dream experiences leads to a certain subjective subjectivism, and one loses hold on the waking condition. It is always advisable to increase the range of the waking consciousness, even in sleep and dream, to bring the control of the waking will, waking consciousness, even in that area, instead of dwelling longer and longer in those areas. They have to, the sleep element, the dream element, must be shortened as much as possible. Because our whole aim is to increase the consciousness, increase the content of consciousness, expand the range of consciousness. The rest, the peace, the recuperation that the body needs is being constantly and incessantly made available to it when one part of you dwells in peace. When you are able to bifurcate your being and consciousness, the frontal part participating in work, and one part always participating, not participating, you know, open to that peace and silence. Simultaneously, the process of recuperation goes on, and one needs sleep less and less. That is why one of the signs of the progress of yoga is that a person begins to need less food, less sleep, less company. Of course, there are periods, particularly in lines of meditation, where at times one is obliged to sit longer, because the consciousness withdraws, indraws itself, and whether in trance or meditation or what appears to be sleep, some work is going on inside. But these are periods of yogic working, not sleep in the sense in which an average man takes it to be. There was a time, till recently, the mother never had a bed. She used to always recline on the chair just when you go up to her room on the first floor, you know, first floor before you turn to the small staircase leading upstairs. There is a cushioned seat. It had a footstool. And that was the place where she used to rest like this. In the morning she would receive us there, transact business, but at night there was a fan there. Normally she is averse to fan, but in summer it used to be put. And that is all. She used to stay there. She never slept, she never had a pillow. It is only recently that under medical doctor's advice and compulsion that she has agreed to have that regular bed. Though even when she is not well, she spends most of the time in the chair. There have been others also who sleep very nominally. So much so that there is a saying in Sanskrit that two people, no, three, I think, three people don't have sleep during nights. One is a yogi, one who does yoga. One is a rogi, one who is sick, diseased, he can't get sleep. One is a bhogi, one who enjoys himself in the sensual way. These three don't care for sleep and they have no sleep. It is a regular saying which sums up quite a philosophy.
Recently, we heard that the mother has sent a very wonderful name to one of the Aurobindo children, called him Oro Maharishi. And I was wondering, when she gives a name, does she see a tendency in the child and name it according to something that's present, or does she bring something for the child's development?
When the thing is brought before her, either a letter or a report, when the thing is presented, immediately she says she sees something answering to the situation. The truth that he is trying to express itself, if it is some, say, you take a picture, any picture, and you ask for a name, she says some, immediately she knows what is the truth behind it. She gives that name. Similarly, the children, she sees what is trying to manifest there. Possibly it must be somebody, a Maharishi, you say, some great sage who has chosen to embody himself and pursue his quest. He has come for transformation, to be a citizen of Auroville, belong to the new race. Like that, she has seen number of particular souls who have come. She doesn't always say, but she has been doing that for number of years, even before Auroville started. Recent children who have been joining the ashram, she knows who they are. And there are one or two who died during mother's present life and have come where mother is here now. They were with mother before in this present life. And now they died and they have taken birth here. She sees that.
Does she call people at any time?
She doesn't call. She doesn't. But in answer to their own aspiration, in conformity with the work assigned to them by the Supreme, these souls come. There are quite a host of them, we are told, are waiting in the subtle physical world for conditions to be ready for supramental birth. They do not care very much to have the animal type of birth, and they are waiting for the new processes to be perfected. When they will all project themselves on earth, whether we will be there alive or not, I do not know. Maybe. It may be tomorrow, it may be 100 years hence. We can't see. The conception of time is different on those planes. You see.
Yeah. The same vision of recognition that enables mother to refuse or accept or believe.
Not always. Not always. She doesn't go so deep. She once explained that she doesn't decide anything without a sign here, sign from here. There are people whom she feels they have come for this work. When she sees them, sees their picture, whatever it is, if they are that type, their category, that they are come for participating in this life, she doesn't consider anything else. Their money, their background, nothing. She straight away admits. She said yes. But there are people who are not that type, who are not ready, but who have possibility of getting ready, as I said, and there she considers the other factors, whether the person can maintain himself, whether the person can be without burden, whether the person has certain capacities with which he can serve, all these. The secondary considerations come when the category is different. She feels, she doesn't go beyond that feeling. In some she sees, but where she concentrates, she always knows, but she does not concentrate always. Either so many factors, so people around at that time talk too much or intervene, or the lack of time, so many things. That is where, as I put it, the luck of the person comes.
Is there also a consideration of the work to be done at this time? For example, the movement to bring India and America closer together. Are there some who can serve in that capacity at this time, so that their place is there rather than here at this time?
She's thinking in terms of the whole universe, not in terms of countries. Because for her vision, you know, the whole globe is one. These things are usually proposed and then permitted or sanctioned. Ultimately, she works on her plane. We can support that work, become instruments of our working to the extent we develop our consciousness to be in tune with hers. We need not develop to that height, but at least to be in tune. Those are her real instruments. Things, real things are done on the plane of consciousness. The results are seen as they germinate on the physical level afterwards. Any physical instruments may come in at that time, but real work is done earlier. Certainly America is drawing closer. But the work has been done since 1939, ever since the Life Divine appeared, and the first copy went to America. It was received there. Somehow it has been in Sri Aurobindo's consciousness that this new young continent is waiting for the new truth. Times without number, they have mentioned that America has a big part to play in the new creation. Even recently she said that there is lot of wealth waiting in America, waiting actually to serve in Auroville. If it has not come, found its way, it is due to certain lacunae here. Want of proper attitude, receptivity at that level among us. So not only America, but many countries all have got to play their part. And they have, I believe, begun to do it. Only those who embody a developed consciousness, a spiritual consciousness, something of the new consciousness, will be able to make a lasting and a radical impact on the leaders of thought and life in other countries. To talk, merely to write, is not enough. There are plenty of clever writers, impressive speakers, who are already doing it, but that has not clicked. One has to carry this flame so that those who hear catch it. Those who hear find a new dimension opened in their being. It is that is more important. It is the minds that have to be drawn. It is the men that have to be drawn. Not so much money or machinery.